The next case is number 861042, City of Lakewood versus Plain Dealer Publishing Company. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case involves an ordinance of the City of Lakewood that gives the mayor contract authority to rent the city's tree lawn property for the placement of news boxes. There are three issues that I would like to relate before the Court today. The three are jurisdiction, discretion, and insurance. Whether there's jurisdiction to pass on the merits of the case, which was pointed out at page 43 of the brief, whether the discretion given by the ordinance to the mayor and the Architectural Review Board are so uncontrolled as to be unconstitutional, and the constitutionality of the insurance requirement. We will attempt to demonstrate that the Plain Dealer did not apply for a permit, did not exhaust its administrative remedies and appeals, and did not properly test the ordinance to assert the issues before the Court to permit passing on the merits of the ordinance. We will try to demonstrate that the discretion is not uncontrolled, and that the insurance requirement, being content neutral and otherwise reasonable, is constitutional. Factually, the original Lakewood ordinance banned all structures, not just news boxes, all structures on the city property. Lakewood did not appeal. They wanted to permit the Plain Dealer to put their news boxes in, and they amended their ordinances twice to accommodate the Plain Dealer's placement of news boxes along the streets. The record shows that had the Plain Dealer applied, they would have secured the spaces they desired. The city engineer so testified, and the Court also found so. There would have been no discretion of the mayor to have been applied, and they could have had the news boxes installed since 1984.
There was no discretion, what?
There wouldn't have been any discretion for the mayor to exercise if they had applied, because there was nothing wrong with where they wanted to place their news boxes.
Well, what was the authority given to the mayor by the ordinance?
To rent the property.
Well, but it was subject to his control, wasn't it?
Was subject to his determination. It's right in the ordinance that if the location was not causing a health or safety hazard, it's written right in the ordinance, if it's not a health or safety hazard, also if it is not causing a nuisance or not unduly interfering with the rights of the traffic, that the location would be all right. Those were the standards that were set up for this.
And you think then that if those were satisfied, the mayor had to issue the permit?
That's right. He was prepared to issue the permit.
Is that what the Court below found?
Yes. It's starting with finding 16.
What did he say? What did it say?
Said that the city was ready, willing, and able to issue the permits had they applied, but the Plain Dealer had not applied for the permits.
Well, what did it say about the breadth of the ordinance? What was the Court's below view of the mayor's discretion?
Well, the district court found the ordinance to be constitutional all the way down the line.
Yes.
So they found that the district court obviously found that as to everything before it, the mayor did not have unbridled discretion, that the discretion was appropriate.
Yes. And then how about the what did it say about the mayor?
That the mayor did not have, they found that the discretion of the mayor was not unbridled and did not find anything wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but there was a provision, wasn't there, that the mayor might deny or grant the application, imposing conditions deemed necessary and reasonable?
That's correct, that he could not just deny it. If he denied it, he had to state his reasons, and there could only be three reasons that he could deny it. One would be location, that there was a health and safety hazard caused by it. The second reason that he could deny it would be because they could not harmonize it through architectural review.
No, but is that the limit of necessary and reasonable?
Necessary and reasonable. This, we're talking about contract authority. And just like many other contracts that have come before this Court, the legislative authority gives an individual authority to make contracts within certain guidelines and gives them discretion for the nuts and bolts details. A nuts and bolts detail in this particular case could be what if the city had to do some repairs on the sidewalk or whatever? They would want to make some arrangements for the plane dealer to move their news box during that particular time. So that's the necessary and reasonable type of regulations we're talking about.
Well, the Court of Appeals thought that the mayor was given too broad a discretion.
That's correct. And our position is that that's one of the things that we're here to...
We have to disagree with them as to the meaning of the ordinance?
If you get to that beyond the jurisdiction, because we start with jurisdiction, and our contention is and has been, because of the appeal procedure that we have established, they should have applied for their permit first. And if they didn't like the conditions, which I submit to you, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have liked them. I think they would have had their news boxes out there since 1984. There wouldn't have been any
problem. Did you make a jurisdictional argument in your jurisdictional statement and in your brief on the merits?
Yes. You can find it at page 31 of our brief. And essentially, we cited the case of Greer versus Sprock that they should have, that the thing was not ripe for testing. We also asserted the defense of the district court that they had this administrative remedy and that they should have asserted it.
Page 31 of the blue brief?
Yes.
That's for you.
Brief on the merits. Is it 43? Excuse me. It's 43. I'm sorry. Page 43 in our brief. The ordinance was written, and I can tell you from firsthand because I wrote it, the ordinance was written so that the City of Lakewood could permit them to place their news boxes without interfering with the constitutional rights of other persons, e.g., Lovell, Schneider, other people that would want to use that property but couldn't, and the reason that they couldn't was because the plane dealer wanted to use it exclusively. We used a rental theory to overcome that. Yes?
I missed that page.
It's page 43.
43?
Yes.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Pardon?
The discussion of the Gannett satellite case, is that what you're referring to on page 43?
Gannett, and also we led up to that with Greer versus Spock on page 42.
I see.
So the PD did not apply. Instead, they sued to attack the ordinance instead, and I think the essence is that they want free, uninhibited use of the city property. That's where they're coming from. So as to jurisdiction, as I indicated, the city had drafted this ordinance with the intent to permit, not to play games with the plane dealer. We wrote this ordinance so that the plane dealer could place their news boxes, and we felt the appropriate theory for allowing this was a rental theory. And you can find in the finding 16 of the court, and I think it's page A30 of the jurisdictional statement is where that finding is, that they would have been able to get these news box locations, but instead they choose to attack the whole thing. The district court would not receive any evidence of administrative interpretation. We offered the testimony of the mayor, who actually requested the legislation to settle the lawsuit. The district court, however, would not allow us to use that testimony as to what was intended. There's no applications. There's no real justiciable issue. It's not right because they didn't apply. Now, as to the standards...
Well, if the ordinance is, in fact, setting up some kind of unlimited discretion in the mayor to grant or deny the permit, and if the court below is correct about that, then I assume jurisdiction would lie, wouldn't it, to make a facial challenge?
I believe I hate to compare cases, but I believe that we have set out far more guidelines than the Gannett case or the Greer versus Spock case. We have limited discretion tremendously compared to those. I don't think the statement could even be made. I hope I answered your question on that.
I'm just disagreeing with the district court.
Pardon?
You're just disagreeing with the courts below.
I'm disagreeing with the Court of Appeals.
On the construction of the
right,
ordinance.
Not the district court.
Yes.
We have the provisions right in the ordinance. You can't make it any different height. You can't make it any different size. You can't put it next to a fire plug. All these things are spelled out. The only thing that's left for the mayor to do is to check to see if architectural review was done. to be sure that it's a safe location, and to put any other conditions, for example, the condition to move the box in the case they have to do construction. That's all.
But we do have to disagree with the construction of the ordinance with the Court of Appeals.
Yes, yes. We do. We also believe that it wasn't even...
On your jurisdictional argument.
Under jurisdictional, I don't believe they should have even reached it.
Mr. Fisher, may I go back to you cited us to the findings on page A30. They said they would grant the permission. As I read that, it only said they'd grant them in the commercial districts, but not along Clifton Boulevard at the sites requested, all of which rely on the residential district.
That's correct, and the Court of Appeals sustained the City of Lakewood on that part of the ordinance, that they could limit them to the commercial districts only. They also sustained that the rental charge could be made.
So the residential issue is not here?
No, the residential issue is not before this court. As to discretion, the order specifies...
Excuse me, I know you...
Yes, Your Honor.
You keep trying to go along, I'm sorry. You say there was nothing left for the mayor to do, but there's sort of a residual clause in the ordinance which says he can place, you know, whatever other conditions are reasonable, and there's no limitation on what that might happen to mean.
I think that these are terms of art, and I believe probably hundreds of contracts have come before this court where the legislative body gives authority to somebody to make a contract. They don't spell out every last term, and as long as the intent of the ordinance, which is to allow the placement of the news boxes, is affected, I don't see where there would be any problem.
Well, they don't all deal with the First Amendment either. I mean, that's what our case law says, that you have to be particularly careful and particularly specific when you're affecting First Amendment rights, and that's pretty broad.
That's correct, and it could be only technical, minor things that would be reasonable and necessary, such as the relocation of the box in the event of construction, as the example that I've cited.
How do I know that?
How do I know that? How do you know that?
How do I know that those are the only things that come within that language? What is the precise language you got? I'm looking for the ordinance here.
Such other conditions, it's C7. Such other conditions as may be deemed reasonable and necessary by the mayor.
Such other conditions as may be deemed reasonable and necessary by the mayor.
Right. Well,
I say technical conditions. That could mean anything in the world, couldn't it?
I don't believe that it does. I think the intent of the legislature was clear that they wanted the news box rental to go on, and it could be only the catch-all type clauses that you would throw into any contract to effectuate it so that the city wouldn't be hamstrung. For example, with utility poles, we have a right to ask them to move it and replace it during construction, and it was anticipated at the time that it was written that it was not going to contain every last nut and bolt, that there was going to be something for the mayor. We knew the plain dealer was going to apply, or thought that they would apply at least, and we knew that we could handle those sites. We didn't know what else was going to come down the line, and so we left it open so that the mayor could protect the health and safety. It's a police power residual clause just to protect the property rights of the city.
And there are no standards.
Pardon?
The board hasn't adopted any standards yet, have it?
Talk about the Architectural Review Board?
Yeah.
I don't know whether they have adopted them now. This was shortly after the
adoption. They hadn't at the time.
They admitted
they didn't.
That's right, because there had been nothing before them to work on, so they had not proceeded to that point. The ordinance specifies the size, height, location, eliminates considerable discretion. The most efficient procedure is right here as to what we have. If the mayor feels uncomfortable giving something that somebody asks, they appeal it to the council. If the council, as the legislative body that gives the contract authority, wants to approve it, that's the end of it. If they don't like what the council does with it, they go into the courts. And it's clear Ohio law that under the Chapter 2506 that the decision of that council cannot be arbitrary, it cannot be capricious, it cannot be illegal, it cannot be unconstitutional, and it cannot be unreasonable or unsupported by evidence. The mayor has to say why he does this or that or the other thing. He has to give his reasons. I don't see what else we could do to make this any better, and it's 100 times better than what you had in Gurr versus Spock and also in the Gannett case. As to the mayor, we have the reasonable and necessary provision for relocation, as I indicated, and other things of that nature. The reasonable, here we have the location standard provided, whether architectural review board was done, the terms of the lease, and then plus the mayor must say if he's going to deny what the reasons are, and it has to be only for the reasons of a health and safety hazard, or there's a nuisance, or that they would interfere with the traffic. A lot has been said about censorship in this thing. These rental agreements are for 1 year. Now, during that 1 year term, what's the mayor going to do? Wait until there's an article in the newspaper and come up with some phony reason to cancel it? I doubt it. And then when they reapply for the next year, assuming that it's profitable to them and they want to continue with it, how would the mayor be able to come up with a good reason for denying when it was there the whole time? Either he's got a good reason for denying or he doesn't. So I find it very difficult as to the censorship, and I would point out that they would have had their permits if they had applied for it. It's clear on this reasonable and necessary, and also these locational things, that it's difficult to convene a council every time some new point comes up. That's why the mayor was given the discretion, and I submit that this contract authority with guidelines plus discretion is very typical for Congress, for state legislatures, for city councils all across the country. As to the Architectural Review Board,
excuse me, suppose the mayor says one of the conditions I'm attaching to this particular one is that it can only be usable by the public from 10 p.m. to midnight.
Then the person, if he would put that on there, then I believe the person would have the right to go to the council. And by the way, under 901.18,
how can
you go directly to the council?
How can you go to the council? The council, as I read this, there's an appeal to the council if he refuses to grant or revokes a permit. But here he's granting it, subject to this condition. Does that?
That's right. And we're not talking about a rigid thing. We have a negotiated contract is what it is. If they insist on a contract without that provision, they want it 24 hours a day.
Then he has to deny it.
He would have to deny it. Then it would go to the council. However, I don't think that would even come up because everybody knew when this came up before the council that these would be 24 hours. So I don't think it would come up at all. As to architectural review, we're talking about the accepted and recognized architectural principles. They do have the power to make specific rules and expand their workbook so that there's more specifics. They never reached this at the time of trial because there was nothing before them. And I submit here it is 1987, almost 1988. The Plain Dealer still hasn't applied. We're talking about properties. This has been all over the country. There's competition between these street commercial strips and the big shopping centers. If you had the big shopping center, there would be no question the private owner of that would tell the Plain Dealer where their news boxes are going to be, and that would be the end of it. We have the public streets, and Lakewood has got an aggressive program under HUD. The same thing has been going on across the country to try to make these commercial districts profitable, to make them aesthetically appealing, to make them vital. They spend millions of dollars on it. They're telling the storefront owner, you have to fix your place up, your signs have to be reduced in size and so forth. So we end the blight. The owner pays for that sidewalk in front of the store, and he has to repair it if it's broke. He pays tax to the city also. Here we want to put the news box there. The only thing the city wants to do is to harmonize that design and color with what the people that have in the storefront. I think it's only fair and reasonable that this be done. That's the purpose of it, to harmonize the installation. Otherwise, what's the use of fighting all this blight and poor signage that is causing this blight? It'll just end up that everybody's going to move to the shopping center and you can just forget about the fight to save the commercial districts. Now, as to the architectural review, we do have the book of standards, and there are, I submit, that the court has probably not had a chance to look at that because it defies placement in an appendix. But there are several pages of showing the architecture of Lakewood and what would fit in. I don't think that would be any particular problem. I think it would have been extended without any trouble. There are standards. They're not going to be able to say, we don't like the article you wrote about our book, therefore, architecturally, we're not going to approve anything for you. It just wouldn't happen. As to insurance, the Plain Dealer has stated they never had an accident with any of these boxes. I just find it hard to believe that none of these boxes ever come back dinged up. I would imagine that some of them have.
Mr. Fisher, does the city require the furnishing of liability insurance and holding harmless for other similar devices that are placed on the streets, or is it just applicable to these news vending?
There are no other comparable devices placed on the street. Yeah,
what about telephone booths?
The telephone booths are not the telephone booths of the telephone company. These are telephones such as the Supreme Court has right here in the court. The city wants them there. They're a replacement for those little red boxes that you used to have. And if you push the button or open the door, the only thing that would be reported is the location of something happening. They put these telephone booths, or not booths, they're actually just posts with telephones on them, in the right-of-way as part of the emergency communication. That way, for free, a person can go and make a telephone call to the police department, to the fire department. They don't have to go to somebody's house if they need a tow truck or an ambulance. They don't have to call the police for that if they have their own private ambulance.
The city doesn't have any of these ordinary pay telephone booths.
This is a pay telephone booth, and I'm not sure if all of them are like it, but the ones that the city has, you just dial O. In fact, now I guess it's 911 in Cuyahoga County, and you get the emergency service. So there's no payment.
Are those the only numbers you can call?
For free.
Yes.
You can call. If you wanted to call your tow truck, you would have to place your quarter or whatever in there
If you wanted to call your wife and say, I'm going to be late for dinner.
Exactly. Exactly. You would have to place coins in for that.
In any event, no insurance or hold harmless is required from the phone company.
No, because these are the cities. This is rented or owned by the cities. Telephone equipment of the city.
How about the bus shelters?
The bus shelters, I would have to categorize that as the city's property also. They have bus stops all over the city, and where there's not what they call an RTA, Regional Transit Authority, shelter, the city has benches that they have installed and pay for themselves. Now, what they have...
Well, is your transportation company public or private?
It's public, and the people of Lakewood pay sales tax to subsidize the running of that bus service.
Owned by whom? You say it's public, the greater Cleveland area, or what?
Yes, it is the Cuyahoga County Regional Transit Authority. Everybody is taxed for that. Instead of Lakewood paying for the benches and we have the people maintain either one, but instead of them paying for the installation of those benches, RTA puts them in for free. That's the convenience for these residents. Everything else is on the utility poles. I don't believe...
What about the telephone? A car can run into a telephone pole.
There's just one set of poles. There's poles that you see in the photographs.
CEI owns them.
Electric Illuminating Company poles, and everything is on those poles. The wires that carry electricity for the street lights, the wires that carry electricity for the traffic lights, the telephone wires, they're all on there.
And CEI is a private company, or is that?
They are a private company subject to regulation under, it's called PUCO.
But they don't have to, you don't require them to insure against liability from a pole falling down?
They have an easement, and they do have to make repairs and relocate their...
But they don't have to insure the city against...
No, these easements...
...suits to the city from the negligent placement of the poles or something like that?
No, these easements were granted a long time ago, and they are also there for the purpose of providing a city service, which is the telephone communications...
And the wires on the poles, you have cable... Companies that have wires on those poles?
The cable company, by other acts, are permitted to have wires on those poles also.
And those wires could come down and hurt somebody, but does the cable company have to insure the municipality against...
The cable television company does have to insure. This is not in the record, I would point out.
Oh, I'm just curious. What about the telephone company? They have wires up there. Do they have to insure?
We do not have a requirement on them for insurance, and that is because they are providing the service to the city for the emergency... communications network. They provide the other wires incidentally.
Mr. Fisher,
yes.
There's presently effect, is there not, an interim ordinance? It replaces the one that we're addressing here.
That's correct.
And the interim ordinance was adjusted to what? To omit some of the provisions that were found by the Court of Appeals to be...
They were temporarily suspended and temporary measures put into place because we got a call from the plain dealer who said, we want to have those boxes. So we passed the ordinance. We're still waiting for their application. But that ordinance will dissolve within a short time after the decision of the case.
By its own terms?
Yes. The council, either if the council takes other measures depending on the decision of this case, or I think it's a 60-day period, it's dissolved. That was to preserve our position in this appeal.
Mr. Fisher, I noticed some of the plaintiff's exhibits have, in the photographs, USA Today units. Did the Gannett people get permits?
No.
And why are they parties to the litigation?
They are not. New York Times tried to join the suit, but they were kicked out on an abstention grounds by the Sixth Circuit.
You're not objecting to USA units?
They have not applied. We don't have anything to do with it. These USA Today units are in somebody else's city. They're not in the city of Lakewood.
So that Exhibit 41 is not in the city of Lakewood?
Let me check.
Or 40?
No, that's a plaintiff's exhibit, and they put in a whole bunch of exhibit over our objection as to news boxes in other cities.
In the city?
In other cities. We felt it was irrelevant, but the court let it in.
So those boxes and those exhibits
are not in your city?
No. There are boxes in our city. I think there were 16 sites where there are boxes. One was the RTA property. There are coffee shops, supermarkets. They're all over the city, within a quarter mile.
Well, are there any USA Today boxes
yes.
in the city?
Yes, there are.
And what about them? Did they apply for permits?
They have not seen fit to apply for permits.
Well, why don't you throw them out?
Well, they're on private property.
Private property.
They're either on private property or public property that's not owned by the city of Lakewood. So we have no jurisdiction. We're not acting as owner as to those. It would just be if a zoning thing would come up that we would apply to that.
May I ask on the – I gather probably the plain dealer has some on private property too, don't they? Or do they? They have
private property?
They have these boxes on private property.
Oh, yes. They have – yes, Your Honor, they have 16.
Are those boxes subjected to any kind of architectural design zoning requirements?
No. No, we have not subjected them to any of the requirements. I haven't looked at them as to – I don't think that it would apply to them because of where they're located. But it may be that we slipped up on that. I don't know. I don't think that we have. I think it's because of their location, it would not apply.
Mr. Fisher, what about the devices shown, for example, in Plaintiff's Exhibit 34? What is that box?
That is the junction box for the telephone company.
So it's owned by a private company, the telephone company?
Yes, it is. And it's.
Do they have to provide insurance?
No, they don't. That is there for carrying the lines not only of private but also of the city's communication system. This is part of the trade-off for the consideration. Actually, the city is getting this service on a lease basis. They may even make some money on some of these phones if people put coins in them. So this is part of the trade-off that they would permit them because they are carrying emergency communications. There have been no rentals of any city property that do not have insurance. As a matter of risk management, every contract that the city of Lakewood makes, unless they slip up, their intention is to have indemnification and insurance. Otherwise, in any contract, whether
it's... Not when you grant an easement.
Well, an easement is an interest in real estate, which is done by a deed easement, and these things were done... They had lighting and electricity probably before the days of the Depression, so there's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
It's there. As to alternate, one other point here. The use of the sidewalk and tree lawn area has been exclusively used for the provision of traditional city services and utilities. There's been no structure erected there that does not provide the city with a service, and there is not such a thing there now. The traditional city services that are provided, newspaper and a sale of newspaper, are not traditional city services. Therefore, the reason for having a classification. As to alternate channels of communication, the Plain Dealer can have a newsboy selling it there. Their newsboys do go up and down the street, up and down the driveways, and deliver newspapers. Their drivers come to the commercial areas. They unload.
Mr. Garner.
Justice Brennan, and may it please the court. I don't agree with too much of what Mr. Fisher said, but I believe he did recognize that we claim, at least, and he is absolutely correct, that this case involves a potential and a very serious potential for censorship. More specifically, the city of Lakewood originally tried an outright ban on the news racks, and the district court found that to be unconstitutional. The city abandoned that route and enacted the ordinance.
Wrong about that.
If the district court was wrong, the matter...
Then the city could have...
Appealed. Yes, if I might, to be precise, Your Honor, we filed our complaint and a motion for summary judgment based on the illegality, the violation of our First Amendment rights with respect to the complete ban. The judge... summoned us into chambers, told us what his decision was sometime after the motion had been submitted, and said that he was granting the motion but was holding in abeyance for a period of 60 days.
Yes.
The entry of the final order to permit the city, if it chose, to...
Let's assume that the city did have the constitutional right to keep the Plain Dealer from having any boxes on the city streets. Would that make any difference in this case?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Not to the issues before, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. They do permit us there, and I think the precedents of this court, when you have this unfettered, complete discretion in city officials, not only the mayor, but the architectural board, that the precedents are clear, that it's facially challenged on that ground. It's the potential for censorship which results from that, which creates the constitutional confrontation, which we feel must be resolved in our favor. So we feel the complete ban is not before Your Honors, and we feel that the discretion in the mayor, unfettered, the architectural board, no standards nor guides whatsoever. And this is not...
All the way into the merits, I had missed the fact that the city was really making an independent jurisdictional argument, which they've advanced here. On the ground, as I understand it, that all you had to do was apply for these rental units. No doubt you could have had them.
Well, I don't know whether we could have had them or not, Your Honor.
But they say the district court so found.
If the mayor found no reasonable reason to deny us, or he found no necessary reason to deny us, presumably we might have had our permit. But it's the potential for censorship here. We're talking at the moment about the city of Lakewood. But if I could make a short excursion outside the record, in the city, in the county of Cuyahoga, where Cleveland is located, there are 73 separate municipalities. Now, whether or not Mayor Sinagra would have readily issued the permit to the Plain Dealer, by the way, he was reelected yesterday, and he has serves another term. Endorsed by the Plain Dealer, I might add, Your Honor. But
that's why you'll get your boxes.
Sir,
I'm sorry.
That's why you're sure you'll get your boxes.
The experience that the Plain Dealer might well anticipate from some of the other municipalities, where there have been rather detailed investigations and stories in the Plain Dealer with respect to city affairs, I think there would be serious question if this unfettered discretion, and there was no right by the Plain Dealer really effectively to go anywhere. The mayor says no, that's it. He says safety, I'm not satisfied, that's the end of it. The architectural board said it's not pretty enough. That's the end of it. We have no place to go.
I thought there was an appeal process.
Yes, Your Honor, there is, but I think the appeal process, when you're talking about First Amendment rights, is insufficient. I think for example, this case started in 1982. Here we are almost to 1988. I think the precedents of this court are ample to support the proposition that when First Amendment rights are denied, that some kind of an appellate process is sufficient to rectify them. It probably would be anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4 years to obtain a complete administrative and judicial review in the state of Ohio through the Ohio Supreme Court. And that, we submit, just does not square with notion of First Amendment rights.
Mr. Garner, that could happen if you had precise standards and you were denied and you just claimed the mayor made a mistake and you had to go on, up on appeal. Well, you might not hear for 2 or 3 years.
If we had precise standards, I don't see there'd be much to be arguing about.
Well, whatever the standard is, somebody can misapply it.
No, I think in this case, news racks are capable of very precise legislation. We're not talking about something nebulous about words that might incite somebody to a riot or something. We're talking about a news rack. Everyone knows what they look like. Everyone knows how big they are. If the mayor or the city council feels that 5 feet is the distance it must be away from a fire hydrant, so be it. 5 feet, not four. Five or more.
Yes, Mr. Garner, but suppose the regulation is no more than one news rack on any corner, or whatever it might be, and then there's some dispute about which one of the competing newspapers wants that corner.
Well, on numbers, Your Honor, the city of Lakewood has a requirement of no more than 3 abreast at this time, or at any one location, 3 abreast. At this time, or at the time this commenced, the plain dealer did not complain about that, feeling that that is within the zone of what's reasonable in the city of Lakewood. Whether that would be true in another city, I don't know, Your Honor. It would depend on, I believe, the application of some of the tests developed by Your Honors in other cases, the Rockford school case, the Granite test. Test of compatibility. If 5 is compatible, then that's right. Some cities have a great many more newspapers to be distributed. Coming back to your precise question, I think a limit of 1 would be suspect for 2 reasons. 1, I think it's too restrictive. And secondly, it does offer perhaps even a pretextual use of
Yes, U.S. News and World Report gets 1, New York Times another, and the Plain Dealer the 3rd.
Yes.
Supposing a 4th paper comes in and they say, well, we've already used up all the 3.
Well, they would have to move. They would have to move down the street a ways. They're not forbidden anywhere else in the city. Just they can't attach it or not.
Well, supposing they make a map and on the map they list all the permissible sites. No more than 3 in any one of these sites, and then you people all get these 3. And the 4th paper comes in. I guess they're just out of luck.
I don't believe,
Real
Your Honor, the map listed all the permissible sites. I believe what's in that map.
I'm giving you a hypothetical.
Oh.
A hypothetical ordinance. They all the standards you want in, and they're very, very definite. But they say, these are the sites, no more than 3 at any one of these 30 or 40 sites. They're all taken. And somebody else comes on and says, we'd like
If we're talking about the traditional public forum here, which is, of course, the entire sidewalk, an entire block long, and it's difficult to imagine that 3 boxes could occupy the whole block. They'd occupy that portion of the block, but the rest of that block would be available for other publications.
And suppose they then say, well, since we can't accommodate all 4 without having what we consider visual blight by too many of these, we just decided not to allow any.
Well, I think that a complete ban on boxes, is that Your Honor's question?
Yes.
Anywhere in the jurisdiction?
I'm just really not sure that isn't some...
I don't believe it's in the case, Your Honor, but I think it would clearly be unconstitutional.
What case from this court do you cite for that conclusion?
That the exercise of First Amendment rights?
No, no. That a flat ban on the renting of space for vending machines.
We don't agree that we are renting space. That's the city's characterization of what's occurring here, Justice O'Connor.
Rely upon.
Well, I would say any of the cases.
Space on the sidewalk must be permanently set aside for the newspaper's vending machines.
I can't quite agree with your characterization of permanently set aside.
Stop disagreeing with my characterization and give me a citation, if you would.
Well, I think any of the cases, Lovell or any of the cases, Shuttlesworth, Cox v. Louisiana, any of the cases which talk about the exercise of First Amendment rights.
I just didn't find any of those directly relevant to the giving up of space on a city sidewalk or otherwise for a permanent device of some kind.
Well, I don't believe that it's a permanent giving up. I said
Is it?
No, it's not hourly, Your Honor.
It isn't yearly either.
Well, it could be whatever.
Well, whatever
is reasonably necessary.
If you didn't get enough nickels and dimes in it, you would move it, I suppose.
I think that's probably correct.
Up until that time, it's going to be there.
Not if there's a legitimate or logical reason for moving it. Street repairs, parade going to occupy the property, whatever reason.
Could I ask you on the discretion and take the city, is it the city architect? Yeah, architectural board.
Yes.
What if the ordinance said the design of these 25 by 50 inch boxes shall be the design specified by the architectural board, and the architectural board meets and it publishes a specific design. If you want a news box, you have to have it this way, no other way. And there is a you wouldn't have any objection if in the ordinance it said 25 by 50, and the design is as follows, colon, and it has a drawing in it of the precise...
Two or three observations, Your Honor. One, if it's a box, if there is a box available, it can meet the specifications, obviously, if there is.
You'd have to make one.
Well, I'm not sure that would be possible. You might be coming back...
Well, then you're back to whether there's a constitutional right to get on the sidewalk.
You've come back.
Well, what about what if it were perfectly feasible to make a box precisely to conform with the architectural board's specifications? Would you say that's uncontrolled discretion?
I don't think if it's precise and it's reasonable and it's available, I can't say that it's necessarily wholly unreasonable.
But having the architecture board have some little bit of discretion even gives you a little bit more room. It's more favorable to you.
Having the architectural board with this unlimited discretion permits them to turn down any box that they desire to turn down, no matter what the publisher is, whether it's because of the box or whether it's a pretextual reason.
Well, I would think you'd rather have it this way and have the architectural board specify in detail what your box has to be.
We would be pleased, and I think would have been pleased, had we been able to arrive at a complete agreement with the city of Lakewood with respect to specificity in the ordinance from top to bottom.
Did you ever ask the architectural board what kind of a box they might approve?
They had no idea. They'd never considered the matter. The testimony in the record says they...
Well, did you ask them?
They were asked at the trial, yes.
But you never showed them a box.
No. Mm-hmm. No. We are, as I believe we mentioned earlier, Your Honor, we feel we have the opportunity or the right to test this uncontrolled discretion facially.
Mr. Goddard, I noticed that the Court of Appeals seems to rely rather heavily on Staub and City of Baxley. Was there an appellate process in that case?
I don't recall, Your Honor.
Mr. Goddard, can I ask you, supposing we were to affirm, I may have the facts a little wrong, but the Court of Appeals enjoined the enforcement of the ordinance in toto, didn't it?
Not entirely. It separated the ban in areas zoned residential and struck down the rest of it, really three, they found three flaws, three constitutional.
I know there are flaws, but I'm just...
And they struck down all of the rest except for the residential ban because it was not separate.
Did they strike down the portion of the ordinance that authorizes the city to rent the property for this purpose?
They struck that down, yes.
So if we just were to affirm, there would in effect be no ordinance pertaining to this subject on the books.
They have enacted a new ordinance.
Oh, they have a new ordinance.
Yes, sir. Yes, yes, Justice Stevens. 1987, earlier this year, I believe they enacted a new one.
So what happens to this lawsuit if we got another ordinance in place?
I thought the new ordinance was just temporary, pending the resolution of this lawsuit. Is that not right?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. What it says is that it suspends the operation of the mayor's discretion and the architectural board's discretion. Those are not part of the new ordinance. The unlimited.
Suspends, you mean until when?
Until some 60 days after this court reaches this decision.
So it is or just until temporary, pending the resolution.
Well, those particular points are, yes. The rest of it's all in position.
Well, Mr. Garnett, what was the idea that if this court affirmed, then after 60 days, would not the interim ordinance continue in effect?
Yes. That's my understanding, Your Honor.
Could that be interpreted as a threat?
As a threat?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what would happen if depending on what this court does, obviously. I think they might very well go back to where they started, the complete ban.
They are trying to influence this court.
Yes. Well, I don't know, Your Honor. I can't.
What other reason would they pass it?
Would they pass it? Well, they
what
wanted to.
What other reason?
Because the plain dealer wanted their boxes on the street.
But I'm trying to understand. The substitute ordinance is now in effect pending the outcome of this case?
The substitute ordinance substantially in toto in effect.
Without the
portions that are
features.
Not in.
Without the objectionable features. It is
yes. That's correct.
Well, then, while that ordinance is in effect, have you gone ahead and installed some boxes?
No, we have not, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because
time is of the essence in these First Amendment issues, I understand. You can't wait for an appeal. You better get those boxes out there.
Well, Your Honor,
you don't have enough confidence in your case here.
Thank you, Your Honor. As I suggested earlier, that we think this is a very important case, and from the plain dealer's immediate standpoint,
we'd rather win a lawsuit than get the boxes out.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. We think we're entitled to the decision that we obtained from the Court of Appeals, and we did not appeal this case. We were satisfied, or we did not seek certiorari from this court. So what we want is what the Court of Appeals ruled. We think that's satisfactory. And that is satisfactory when we go to these other 73
municipalities, I gather.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
And that's because of your concern about all the other municipalities.
Not only, yes. The plain dealer's concerned about all the other. All 73, yes, and more. That's just the one county. Now, that's just the one county. There are a number of other municipalities in the surrounding counties. Oh, yes. And that's the reason that we're here, because Mr. Fisher brought us here. But that's the reason that we urge this court.
Are any other news boxes on the street?
In Lakewood?
Yes.
Not to the best of my knowledge, Your Honor.
But no one has taken advantage of this interim ordinance.
As far as I know, that's correct.
Because if there hadn't been the interim ordinance, there wouldn't have been any ordinance in effect at all after the Court of Appeals judgment.
That's correct. That is correct.
And then, if you wanted to get on the
sure.
street, you'd have
sure.
to you'd have a little problem getting your boxes on the street without an ordinance.
Without an ordinance?
Or would you just say we're going to put them up because we have the constitutional right to be there?
Well, I think that's I can't speak. Yes, it is true, Your Honor. In a number of cities, there are no ordinances whatsoever dealing with news racks.
Yeah, but they don't object to the newspaper.
Right, they acquiesce in it, correct.
They acquiesce in the unfettered discretion of the mayor, I presume.
Well, if it's unfettered, it's unexercised as well.
Well, he exercises it by not objecting.
Yes, sir.
Well, they're out in front of this building. You can buy the whatever you want out there, except the plane dealer.
Well, I think, Your Honor, there's probably more call for different publications in the city of Washington, certainly, than the city of Lakewood, Ohio. Many more publishers want their newspaper here in the nation's capital than do in the city of Cleveland or its suburban areas.
Of course, that doesn't mean it wasn't litigated. It was a few years ago.
Yes. With respect to the insurance, I would say, make a couple of observations. One, there's two parts to it. One is the indemnity, which, as I read it, is so broad that the plane dealer, or the press, small p, is called upon to indemnify the city for things that may even be the city's fault if there's a news rack even collaterally involved one way or another. And I think that kind of provision, without respect to the First Amendment, would be abhorrent. And more importantly, the insurance, from the questions in the court, I believe they're all directed toward the fact that the requirement is solely for insurance to be provided by the newspaper publishers who use these news racks. The other privately owned utilities, nobody else is called upon for the same thing. And we think that quite clearly singles out the press in an unconstitutional.
Well, the city takes the position, I guess, that it is renting the space for the vending devices and that it would charge, require the furnishing of insurance for anyone who rented space from the city.
Yes. May I state my view of what I think the relationship is of the plane dealer or a publisher with its rack on the street and the city? We don't view it as a possessory interest of any sort. Nor do we view it as a property right. The word rental connotes to me some sort of a passage of an interest in real property. Pay money for a right to do something. It's assignable, it's this, it's that. What I conceive or perceive we have is a First Amendment right, the same as we would if we had a news hawker out there. A news hawker can stand there.
We think that it is different, that it is a physical occupation of city property and that that is distinguishable from allowing people to walk on the sidewalk and sell newspapers.
Yes. Well, there's no question about that, but this is a fixed device. It's there. It doesn't get cold. It doesn't go to lunch. It's there to provide newspapers to the public at all hours.
24 hours a day.
Week in and week out,
month in and month out. Now, what if we think that's different?
Well, I think it is different, Your Honor. I think it is different, particularly in the respect that it far better serves the public that may desire to buy newspapers. It serves them 24 hours a day.
That it is not possible under the First Amendment for the city to require indemnity insurance for those devices?
I think that's a remarkable proposition.
No, I'm
not suggesting that, Your Honor. No, I'm not suggesting that. I think the evil was the one that was suggested by the earlier questioning. And that is the singling out of the press.
What if they say that for every situation in which they are granting a permit to physically occupy city property, they're going to require that type of insurance?
Do they do the same with the electric utility?
Too late, they say. The dam. Before the city ever thought of such things, they've given an easement already.
Well, I think the city council, certainly that could be rectified, Judge Scalia.
Not if the easement's been granted already, Al.
Well, I think that I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. It depends a lot on state statutes which establishes the relationship of some of these municipalities and the utilities. And I'm
not an authority on that subject, but if there were a demonstrated need that there were safety hazards involved with the telephone poles, I'm sure one way or another a city would be successful in obtaining insurance coverage to protect it. I might add that the record is barren here to show that there's ever been a safety factor with respect to news racks. It just doesn't exist.
Let's assume that, carrying Justice O'Connor's question further, that we do think that this is somehow a property interest and that the city can lease these stations in a way. Is it your position that every provision of the lease contract must be spelled out in the ordinance, and there can be no variation from one contract to another?
I think the ordinance could be very specific, Your Honor.
I didn't ask whether it could be very specific. I asked every a simple question. Must every provision of the lease contract be in the city ordinance, including the price? And the mayor would not have the ability to alter the price from year to year. Would that be too much discretion? I mean, I'm trying to think of how you could set up a sensible system. It doesn't seem to me the city's being vindictive or coming down on the press, which endorses their mayor or anything like that. It seems to me they're trying to do a reasonable thing, and I'd like to know, what do you suggest they could have done differently? Yes. For instance, that provision, such other terms and conditions deemed necessary and reasonable by the mayor. Well, I can think of a million things that could come up. Why in one particular location you have to add an additional condition besides the ones you normally think of? This location is near a school or who knows what.
I think it
seems to me quite reasonable to put in that residual clause. Now, you don't like it. What would you have said instead?
I don't like it because of the threat of censorship, Your Honor. What would I have said? I would have said something considerably less than that. I think that certainly...
If in the future there arises
a safety factor demonstrated to the satisfaction of whoever, the matter will be brought to the attention of the publisher, and it will be discussed with the publisher. Whatever. I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know either,
and that's part of the problem. I mean, it seems to me that what counsel for the city raises is a reasonable thing, that you need a little bit of give if you're writing God knows how many contracts for stations all over the city. They won't necessarily be identical. Now, how can that all be handled and specified in one city ordinance?
Well, I don't know of anything that in the 4 or 5 years we've been talking about this, that the city has suggested they would add, except one thing. They said they forgot to put in a prohibition against placing a rack in a handicap, or a news rack in a handicap ramp. So the new ordinance has that in. One possibility, obviously, Your Honor, is amending the ordinance when something occurs to them. If there's an emergency, if Halloween, a prankster moves a box out in the middle of the street, obviously the local police are going to handle the situation. But I think that this is an area where you're dealing with boxes that everybody can identify. They understand them. I think you can be absolutely specific. And I, except for the direst of emergencies, most anything that turns up subsequently could be very well handled at the next regular or special meeting of the council.
May I ask you a question on another subject? Are there any ordinances either in Cuyahoga County that pertain to the retail sale of newspapers, magazines, and the like on public property? I know in a lot of cities there are public newsstands that are operated by human beings rather than these inanimate objects.
Are they generally the subject of ordinance? So far as I know, there are no public newsstands on public property in Cuyahoga County.
In that area, I see.
I know of none, unlike Washington. I don't recall ever having seen one.
Station.
Oh, yes. The stations, the bus stations have the news racks, the bus stations do, the railroad station does, any number of the RTA stations, the rapid transit stations, all those do, yes, Your Honor. Uh, I believe, Your Honors, we have covered everything that I desire to bring to the attention of the court, and it's obvious that we urge affirmance of the decision of the Court of Appeals in its entirety.
Thank you, Mr. Donner. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.